So we're currently looking at the book of Genesis, scrutinizing especially on the biblical leaders that come out on the second half of the book. The particular biblical history that we're currently studying is full of disappointing events, such as corruption at the Garden of Eden and the Tower of Babel incident where people have defied God's governing, which led to a division of languages. These events reflect the Satan's advocacy on humanism, which is leading God's people into path of death. So as we try to recall the previous sermons, we have learned that the main theme of the book of Genesis is not about blessing, but rather it's about erecting God's kingdom. We know this because God's not punishing or judging his people during this time, but rather trying to draw them closer to his kingdom by calling on them. So more specifically, we're looking at the storyline of God calling out to Abraham to reveal who God truly is. And through Abraham, God is telling his people how to live this world as a faithful servant of God. Therefore, ultimately, using his people to spread his gospel after understanding his true intentions. At the beginning of Jesus' ministry, he told the people to repent because God's kingdom is near. Thus, we can see that the main point for both Old and the New Testament is about God's kingdom. So let's recap. In Genesis, chapters 1 through 11, it introduced the beginning of God's kingdom, and it describes why his kingdom is being looked away. So that was from chapters 1 through 11. And now in chapter 12, it introduces the main characters, and it tells a story of how God calls his people and how he restores his nation. This shows how to live like God's people. The protagonists of this story are mainly Abraham and Jacob, even though Isaac is mentioned throughout. The characters of Judah and Tamar that we have looked at last week is just a continuation of Jacob's life story. So as we finish up on the Genesis in the next 2 weeks, the story ends with Jacob's death at age 147, which officially ends the stories of his descendants as well. Thus, you can say that Genesis is heavily compromised of Abraham and Jacob's stories. So the last week's sermon was about Judah and Tamar. We're able to learn that God-given mission, which began with Abraham, has slowly deteriorated or had become distant from Jacob's descendants due to Jacob's identity issue. So from chapter 38, we're able to confirm that the faithful tunnel between God and us are not just made up of the blood of descendants of Jacob or Abraham, but rather it's made up with the kind of faith that Tamar has shown. So God's kingdom is being realized through people who are faithful to his words and his callings, rather than by some blood that you inherited from Abraham. So now, we must remember the stories in the Bible are about faith. They're not stories of people who were specially chosen, such as Abraham or Jacob. It's about the faith. So let us just remember the principle that I just mentioned when we're reading throughout the Bible, because that will definitely help you in terms of having a big picture in mind of what God's intention is with his message for us. So if we continue to study the story of Joseph while having those principles in the back of our minds, then all of us can swiftly understand the rest of Genesis. Here are the brief pointers for each chapter from 39 to 50, and this will definitely help you in terms of the guideline as a whole. So chapter 37, it was about famous story of Joseph being sold off as a slave at age 17. Chapter 39 is about Joseph being put into jail because he was accused of having an affair with the wife of Potiphar, who was the Pharaoh's bodyguard. Chapter 40 was about story about Joseph deciphering the dreams of the cupbearer and the baker in the prison. In chapter 41, this is the turning around point for Joseph as he reads the mysterious dream of the Pharaoh, and he becomes a prime minister of Egypt and also marries his wife. So chapter 42 was about Joseph. He has an unexpected reunion with his brothers as he recognizes his brothers who came before him for food. And Joseph takes Simon as a hostage and asks the brothers to bring the youngest brother Benjamin. And now chapter 43 was basically, it was against his will. Jacob finally sends his son Benjamin to Joseph, as Joseph has asked. This chapter also shows his emotions for the mixed feelings that he has for his brother. And chapter 44 is realizing that leaving his brother Benjamin in Egypt with Joseph will literally kill his father. The brothers realize this, and that's why Judah, one of the brothers, steps forward in front of Joseph, begging for mercy. And instead, he offers himself as a sacrifice on behalf of Benjamin. Because remember, the brothers already brought a tragic news to his father Abraham, to Jacob. And if they bring this tragic news again, saying that his youngest son, Benjamin, was taken away by a prime minister of Egypt, then this will definitely kill their fathers. So one of the brothers, Judah, actually offered him on behalf of Benjamin as a sacrifice. In chapter 45, after seeing Judah's reaction, Joseph couldn't just resist his feelings anymore. He bursts out and reveals his true identity to his brothers. Then he asks his brothers to bring his father to Egypt. And now chapter 46, Joseph finally meets his father Jacob and rest of the family. And chapter 47, there's several things happening in this chapter. First of all, Jacob meets the Pharaoh for the first time. And secondly, with God's granting of the insight, Joseph's declaration made about the famine that would take place for around approximately 7 years have indeed truly took place in Egypt, which ultimately guaranteed the Pharaoh's wealth. Thirdly, Jacob asked his body to be buried next to his ancestors, namely next to Abraham. And now chapter 48 is about Jacob blessing his sons and recognizing Joseph as his acting eldest son. Now, of course, he wasn't biologically not the eldest son, but he kind of recognizes Joseph as his, you know, the best son, I guess, the best privilege that could be given to the eldest son. Now, chapter 49 is about Jacob's last testament before his death at age of 147. And finally, chapter 50 is about, so after Jacob's funeral, the brothers of Joseph are in fear as they believe that Joseph might take aggrieved revenge against them for what they have done to him in the past. Because, you know, their father passed away, they thought that there was no shield to hide behind anymore. However, Joseph comforts his brothers. Then at age 110, Joseph dies and also asks that he will be buried next to his ancestors as well, just like how Jacob has asked his body to be buried next to the ancestors as well. And this concludes the story of Genesis. And today and next week, we'll finish up on Genesis and we'll continue to look at the second half of Genesis. So it is fascinating to recognize that although it ends in a happy note, it's like a happy ending. But the rough events that had taken place in Joseph's life, betrayed by his brothers at age 17. Can you imagine that? At age 17. And then sold as a slave to an Egyptian, and also being accused for a crime that he had never committed, which ultimately sends him to jail for pretty much the rest of his life. And this miserable life lasted for not just several months, but rather over 13 years. So it is important to recognize that, to be aware that even though it ultimately ends in a happy ending, the hardships that has taken place in Joseph's life was not just for several months, but rather it was for 13 years. So if you're trying to see why all of this has happened in Joseph's life, we can speculate that it is because of Jacob's ignorant lifestyle. Even though Jacob was mindful of God during his lifetime, that's true, he was very mindful of God during his lifetime, but he didn't really put God's words as his top priority, but rather he placed himself in the center of his life. This is precisely the reason why his life was led to a rugged result. Unfortunately, the consequences that he had brought to his life had passed down to his descendants, and Joseph's life was no exception to that. You'd be unfair to automatically accuse the children as sinners just because their parents are sinners. However, it is an inevitable and uncomfortable truth that the children are very likely to imitate their parents' sinful nature and practices. If the parents live and perform sinful actions in front of their children, I'm pretty sure if you're a parent and if you have a child, you realize how quickly the child imitates everything that you do. Therefore, Joseph surely was not an exception to this. And he learned, he saw and he observed Jacob's, you know, ignorant lifestyle. So as we continue to read these parts of the Bible, we become curious and confused about the consequences happening to the descendants, to their ancestors' sins. For example, we might be wondering, why do we need to suffer or pay for the sins caused by Adam and Eve? I mean, that's a fair question, right? I mean, this is a genuine question that could be asked by us as we see similar patterns of stories throughout the Bible. So let's put this in the following perspective. As we live our lives, we encounter numerous events that are just simply out of control. Things that we cannot choose. For example, we're born with a certain gender, certain nationality, certain class that defines our financial situation. And even our parents, we cannot choose our parents. These are things that we're just born with. This applies to Joseph as well. He was born under his father's father Jacob, and he had four mothers. He was shown favoritism from his father, which allowed his brothers to feel jealous towards him. This ultimately has led to hardships in Joseph's life. None of this was the will of Joseph. Now, having this perspective in the background, through Joseph's story, who lived a similar life as us, namely the life and situation that we have never asked for, we will examine what it means to live a faithful life as a servant of God who serves for for God's kingdom in this earth. So as we look at Jacob's life once more, Jacob had four wives with 12 sons and one daughter. However, Jacob only showed favoritism to his youngest son, Joseph, and were rather indifferent towards his other children. He beloved Joseph by giving him the best food, best clothes, without having him work in the field while his brothers are out in the field sweating, providing food for the family, and still not getting love from their fathers. I mean, this seems to be very unreasonable in terms of a father with 13 children. It is somewhat more understandable for Jacob to give maybe a little extra attention to Benjamin as he lost his mother during the birth. But it seems excessive, way too excessive, to show this much love for Joseph and very minimal attention to his other sons. This strongly reveals how ignorant and selfish Jacob was. Look, favoritism destroys the relationship among the brothers, among the siblings. And although the child who receives favoritism might be satisfied at certain moments in his or her part of the life, ultimately it will not make him or her happy, as favoritism leads to a hostile environment among his or her siblings because of the constant attack by the siblings. Thus, the relationship among the children and the love that they show to each other is determined by the parents. I mean, technically speaking, Jacob failed to provide love for his children, but rather planted a hatred feeling towards each other in their relationships. Jacob's selfish and ignorant desire has led to an unforgettable pain in their children's lives. Therefore, without looking at the conclusion of Joseph's story, I mean the happy ending, let's forget about that for a second. Because Jacob's short-lived favoritism towards Joseph, he has basically ruined Joseph's life for 13 years. Remember, Joseph has never asked any of this from his father. He never asked Jacob to only love him and not his brothers. He wasn't like that. Or I'm sorry, Joseph never asked for this. And purely, it was Jacob's immature behavior that has led to this undesirable consequences for Joseph, such as being sold off as a slave at age 17. It's a fact that if a person in the group cannot relinquish his or her selfish desires and greed, then regardless of whether that group belongs in church, family, or at work, the conflict would never cease to exist. Also, people around them or her will go through a lot of pain and hardships. I mean, if you look at the Bible that mentions Joseph, whenever the Bible mentions about Joseph, we're able to see that he was a faithful and an honest boy. In chapter 37, Jacob asked Joseph to run an errand to where his brothers were watching over the sheep. He responds his father with a firm yes. But note that from the valley of Hebron to Shechem was approximately 80 kilometers. And from Shechem to Dothan was approximately 24 kilometers. Even though it was around a 100 kilometer long trip, Joseph didn't complain and found his brother by asking people for directions along the way. Despite the fact that Joseph lived this honest and responsible life, he was still sold off as a slave by his brothers. Just think about this for a moment. Think about the severity that favoritism brings upon the brothers. Joseph traveled 100 kilometers just to see his brothers, so it is not too crazy to say that his brothers could have showed a little bit of love for Joseph. But obviously, the favoritism had too much impact on the brothers for them to forgive Joseph. To add on to this, we can see that brothers were uneased by what they did to Joseph. In chapter 42, on their journey to Egypt to buy food, they talk about how their lives are cursed because what they have done to Joseph, they feel bad for what they've done. So again, we can see that the brothers really were uncomfortable of betraying Joseph because they didn't really hate Joseph, but rather they hated the favoritism that was shown by his father to Joseph. It's simple as that. So to summarize, Jacob's immature action of showing favoritism to Joseph has destroyed the chemistry among the brothers and has ultimately led the brothers to even debate about whether to kill Joseph or not. So, what lesson can we take away from this tragic and sad story? Egoism, the very selfishness of a person, can lead to a detrimental and yet a scary result. Selfishness has a tendency to disrupt the group and isolate a person from others in the group. If we have someone like Jacob in the group, then he has a tendency to change the atmosphere within the group to a more hostile environment where people compete against each other and hate on each other. In a bigger context, we can see this happening in the world. In our world, people are using violence and terror in the society because of their own selfishness, because of their own desires, because of their own thoughts, without having to think about others, what others will feel. So the selfishness exists among us because we're not really aware of ourselves. Look, everyone has some selfish desires within them. Thus, we need to try hard to not fall into our ego or selfishness. One very useful way to prevent ourselves from leading ourselves into this path, into this slippery slope, is by listening to other people's feedback. The feedback provided by those around us, in our group, at church, at work, within our family, is a very useful tool. You'll be foolish. Don't get me wrong, you'll be foolish to depend our lives completely based on other people's feedback. We're not suggesting you to do that. However, it is something else to listen carefully with a humble mindset on other people's suggestion. It will help us. It will definitely help us to smoothen out our blind spots. So if we consider for a moment of the Johari window model created by Joseph Luft and Henry Ingham, which is used during consultations, we can see that there are areas where our perspective on ourselves is different from the perspectives that others have on us. And there are some areas where, for example, I have no idea why I act or think in a certain matter. And these are called unconscionable behaviors. And this model just shows us how useful it is to get different perspectives, to see from a different vantage points. Because obviously, we don't know everything. We can't see everything about ourselves in an objective manner. Therefore, we need to listen to other people's feedback on us. We need different perspectives of our actions in order to draw out this unconscionable side of us. I mean, how else will we do this, right? Now, this will be very important within the cell group that we have. I mean, this is the very purpose for us to even have cell groups in the first place. So to be ignorant of our selfishness means that we're ignoring our blind spots and shutting our ears to the feedbacks. Also remember, there are parts of us that we cannot see and observe from our vantage point. We need different vantage points and different perspectives. This is an area that we need to work on tirelessly and continuously until we die. So, I mean, from the previous sermons, we know that Jacob lived an ignorant and selfish life, who never opened his ears for other people's feedback until a big incident took place where the sons committed a multiple murder due to the rape of Dinah. Similarly, ignorant people and selfish people cannot even listen properly to God's voice. I mean, God usually speaks to us in areas that we lack. Not just the blind spots, but also our unconscionable behaviors that other people cannot really tell us on. He speaks through us in those areas. Therefore, if we don't open our ears to those things, to feedbacks, then we can never listen to God's voice. Now, we know that Jacob met God at two instances where he ran away from his brother Esau and when he came back to his hometown. Nevertheless, he never truly listened to God's words. He just interpreted God's words into his own interpretation and how he wanted to understand it. He didn't take it as a face value. I mean, if the words were to his liking, then he responded with a big amen. But if it was to his dislike, then he didn't even respond. So regardless of who were giving the feedback, parents, teachers, pastors, or leaders, Jacob cursed them all, ignored them all. So before it develops into a misunderstanding among us, we need to communicate to each other to uncover our blind spots. We need to help each other to see the blind spots that can eventually lead to a dysfunctional group. Isn't Jacob's life such an irony? I mean, his selfish life by showing favoritism to only one of his sons has led his other sons to collude among themselves to deceive him, to deceive their own father. Where did the sons learn this from? Why are they behaving in such a sinful manner? Look, they learned it from Jacob himself, their father. The sons are just a mere reflection of who Jacob truly was. The influence of a bad parenting has led his sons to a disrupted life. There is no doubt that Jacob did his best in terms of educating his sons and daughter with his mouth, verbally. However, the verbal teaching has its limits. The children really learn. They really, really learn by looking at their parents' action, not by what they say to them. Similarly, we Christians need to act like a true Christian, whether it's at church or outside of church, at your work. People will want to hear about God, and the gospel will spread only when our actions truly reflect the image of Jesus Christ. I mean, they won't listen to us if we don't act upon our words. Just because we might know the Bible well, it doesn't mean that we're living a true Christian life. It just shows that we have a lot of information and knowledge about the Bible. It doesn't mean that we're true Christians. We need to go beyond just providing information about the Bible. We need to act upon that information. And that's the truth. So we have just examined the impact of what an ignorant behavior can do to Jacob's life. And this examination gets us all worried as a current parent or future parents. So one thing is certain. We know that God has granted us with a free will. We've been talking about free will throughout the Genesis. And it comes back again in this part of Genesis as well. Thus, the parents' lives are based on their free wills. Any consequences that may follow on to his children are inevitable because they see and learn from their parents' thoughts and behaviors. If this was not true, then God would need to control every minor part of our lives. However, we know that this is not true. On the other hand, we know that God, in the book of Isaiah, tell us that he is a fair God. Just because the parents misbehave, it doesn't automatically mean that he would transfer the parents' sins over to their children. That's not who God is. God's a merciful God. Nevertheless, what's comforting about this is that God has given us a free will, has given a free will to the children, not just to the parents. The parent, like Jacob, has used his free will to lead his life and brought disaster upon his sons. But that free will, that same free will, because God's a fair God, is given to the children as well. So regardless of whether the parents have lived a deceitful and sinful life, the children have the free will to turn things around. Just like how Joseph accepted his fate and responded humbly before God after all the bad things that had happened to him. Because he lived such a faithful life, he was able to break the curse that his father had created. Just think about it. He was a servant, or he was a slave, and now he died as a prime minister of Egypt. That was possible because he used the free will to change his life around. Similarly, this can happen in our lives as well. As long as we come before him, before God, like how Joseph did, then he will surely bless us. Look, in conclusion, God has given us the free will. And because he gave us the free will, he didn't stop the brothers from selling Joseph as a slave. He didn't intervene in those bad events. I mean, you guys agree with this, right? You guys ask all the time, right? Why does such a horrible murder happen in our neighborhood? Why is God letting those things happen? Why is God letting people that we love get into a horrible car accident? But remember, with the free will, Joseph was determined to obey God in the midst of all the hardships that came about his way. And surely, God was with him. If Joseph blocked out God and acted with resentment, then he couldn't have become the prime minister or God might have not even broken the consequences that resulted from Jacob's sins. This is why it is important to quickly accept the things that are fixed in this world, something that we cannot choose or vary. Like our parents, like our wealth, like our financial situation. Those things that we cannot fix. Those things are already fixed and we cannot change. Therefore, you must learn to accept those things quickly and move on to the things that we can choose, that we can utilize our free will that God has given us, such as remembering and accepting God's words and his promise. And surely he will bless us like how he blessed Joseph. And surely he will come through with the promise that he has made to Abraham. So let us remember to always open our ears and always try to get some feedback and try to learn from it. And stop finding reasons to complain about what's happening in our lives. But let us accept it. And use our free will. Let us utilize our free will to truly act like Jesus, act like Joseph, so that we may to be praised and blessed in the future. So to add on to what we have been saying here, we can see that the major difference between the life of Jacob and the life of Joseph. There's a major difference between those two lives. Remember how Jacob ran away from his brother Esau because of his deceit and irresponsible actions. However, Joseph was different. Even though his father has asked him to go to see his brothers about something, the brothers that hated him and where the journey was over 100 kilometers long, he still obeyed to his father's command promptly. That was a major difference between who Jacob was and who Joseph was. I mean, people can laugh and try to get under our skins, but it's our choice to just smile and laugh it off. It is our free will that will determine our future. Even though we might be taken as a slave, like Joseph, if we know and understand God, and therefore have the reason to live, reason to continue to live faithfully, then we won't show resentment or complain about the current situations, about the current hardships that are placed in our lives. Even though we might have a troubling parent like Joseph, our lives will be different and will be successful if we are selfless and continue to obey to God's commands. So let's learn from Joseph's exemplary life. Let's not complain about the things that we cannot fix, things that we weren't able to choose, such as bad parents or bad environment. Let's stop complaining. Just like how Joseph picked himself up and stayed faithful to God's promise, let's do the same in this world. Even though we know that more difficult situations and more severe hardships will come at us in the future. So take this real life situation for an example. These twins came out on a documentary and expressed their hatred towards Korea and their real parents. These pair of Koreans were adopted by this American couple. However, the parents were not just good people. They abused these kids and the kids had to run away from home. When they tried to find their true parents in Korea, they found out about the background story of what had happened to them. Because of this, they continued to live a depressing life. We hear stories like this all the time, and it really breaks our hearts. It really does. I mean, it's so unfair, right? It happens to them while we live happily over here. But remember, our parents do have a large influence in our lives, but we have the free will to choose what we will do in our lives, with the rest of our lives. We cannot completely despair and blame on the current situation. We have the choice to make our own lives. If you don't act like Joseph, then our lives will just keep on rolling in circles. We'll just go around in circles, not believing in God's words, not trusting in Him, but just living a selfish life with our selfish desires, shutting our ears on the feedbacks provided by others. And we will continue to be unhappy and continue to blame on God, blame on other stuff, and complain about our lives. It is inevitable that more severe hardships will come up in our lives. And it will just continue to go in circles. Thus, as Christians, we need to be different and start acting like Joseph. Because that's the only way to actually overcome the hardships that will occur in our lives. This is just part of this world that we cannot avoid. Just because we're Christians, it doesn't mean that we're different from others in terms of having some kind of advantage. I mean, if we get into a crazy car crash, then we will die like anyone else. However, what makes us different from non-Christians in this world is our philosophy, our faithful behavior towards God during those hardships. Nothing else is different. So I'll just give you another example here. We all have probably heard of Jason Lee, who had a tragic car accident in their senior year at year 2000. Senior year of college is a very, it has a high reputation. And she was obviously a smart person, but she just was involved in a tragic car accident. She suffered a severe burn that pretty much demolished her dreams. It wasn't even her fault. It was the other driver who was driving recklessly. She even testified at one point that it would be much better, much easier for her to just die rather than trying to fight off this pain. During that time of her life, she could have easily blamed God and just complained to Him for allowing such things to happen in her life. However, she didn't do that. Rather, she followed the footsteps of Joseph. She testified that she realized so many things that wouldn't have realized if it wasn't for this accident. She became aware of those who were suffering in this world and realized that those people need help, as she needed help to do even the smallest things, such as getting up from the bed. Eventually, she overcame this impossible hardship and pursued her studies in the States. Now she's back in Korea and has become a professor at Hwandong Global University as a psychology professor. So let's reflect back in our lives. We panic and sometimes even freak out as we are trapped inside a cave. For example, for her, she was actually captivated in some dark cave where there seemed to be no light of hope. However, she stood strong and firm before God's words and His promise by answering like this. So let me read to you what she has said. She said, "When I realized this was the dark cave that I was in, it felt like this was the end of my road. I couldn't stop myself from feeling despair But I would like to encourage every one of you not to lose hope during those times. If you just push yourself a bit further and encourage yourself a little more, then you will see the light. And I realize that for Christians, there is a tunnel waiting at the end of the cave. And surely God will take you to that tunnel. Church, this is the true Christianity. Even though your life might not seem to be fair, if we really truly believe in God's words and His kingdom and strive ourselves further down the cave to where the tunnel is, then we will be able to live as true Christians who doesn't despair about over mere hardships in this world. So today, let us all repent. Let's think about all those times and things that we have complained and blamed. Have you ever said to yourself or to others that your life is horrible and that your life is miserable, that your life sucks? If so, just look at Jesus or Joseph. They were faced with hardships that they have never asked for. It was the reckless driver or those jealous brothers who have caused those hardships. But these two people suffer all the pain. But they have made a choice to continue to live with their lives by relying on God's words and His promise. If we truly act like them, like Jason or Joseph, then surely God will listen to our hardships and He will give us peace and comfort. And that's the truth. So today, let's change our lives. Let's change how we behave or react to the things that are happening in our lives. Let's stop complaining, but let us think about what we can do to change our lives. And let us just pray about it and ask God for His mercy, because you know He's a fair God and He'll come through with His promise. And that message should encourage us throughout the week.